Greetings and welcome to GESPCU, the University of All Things Guaranteed Energy Savings Performance Contracting. In this podcast, presented by the Energy Services Coalition and sponsored by the United States Department of Energy, John and I will take an even deeper dive into savings calculations for our investment grade audit. This is where the engineering, the very math of the project, comes together and defines the ultimate paid for by savings project. Each project owner should expect that the math of the project, all the used or applied assumptions and applications of engineering standards, be displayed to the degree that a knowledgeable third party could reproduce the calculations and arrive at the same or remarkably similar results. This practice of full disclosure and transparency helps ensure accuracy and adds credibility to the estimates and projections. On the other hand, it's equally important that the work of the calculations, the math and logic, is described in such a way so as to be understandable to a layperson. This generally means that all the sources of data be labeled and referenced, all the descriptions of the algorithms, the weather bin analysis, assumptions, calculations, it all needs to be presented and explained in what I've come to call third grade math teacher language. This is simply so that anyone reading the IGA has the ability to understand what's illustrated in the sophisticated calculations that ultimately represent the energy savings for the report. So, first the science of the calculation, and then a description that could be reasonably well understood by a reviewer or supervising authority.
Dale, I think that's a great point, but it's important to note also that requiring the presentation of this highly technical information be understandable for lay readers shouldn't replace the experienced technical review that's necessary. Like we've repeated often, if the owner doesn't have an experienced technical staff to be able to adequately review the engineering and the calculations, they should seek help. Hopefully, if necessary, they've already by now procured the services of a third-party reviewer, but if not, they should certainly engage one now. In this section of the report where the calculations are displayed, the utility and cost savings for all the energy conservation measures must be illustrated for each year of the performance period or the guarantee period or the finance period. They're all synonymous. I point out each year of the contract so that you give reasonable thought as to whether or not you should expect the avoided cost to go up or down over the number of years the project's going to be guaranteed or financed, as agreed to between the ESCO and the owner. Recall that the duration of this performance period may be subject to the term limitations outlined in a state's enabling legislation. One of the things that comes into play when you're predicting savings for each year into the future is the concept of the escalation of utility rates and/or labor costs. We spent a little time on utility rate escalation in a previous podcast, but as you can imagine, these escalators can have a significant impact on the total savings projections over the full contract term. It's a good idea to be sure that the budgeting authority is in agreement with any rate escalations proposed for your project. In summary, these savings calculations are some of the most important metrics in terms of determining what the savings will pay for or what can or cannot be included in the project. This, along with the allowable term of financing, essentially provide boundaries around what the project can pay for, defining the ultimate paid from savings project.
Great points, John. But it's not just the math of the pre- and post-construction utility consumption or spend that should be presented here in the IGA. Alongside these calculations, there must be a discussion about all the variables that impact the savings. Things like when and how many occupants will be in the spaces and how that was determined. What's the range of temperature and humidity, light levels and the like that will be considered acceptable? What's the weather data? Where did it come from? And how, or if it was normalized, how is it normalized to the base of your case? All of this information is important to take into consideration when you're projecting savings and cost estimates into supporting calculations, both for now and for how they might change over the term of the agreement. Without appropriate documentation, determining where savings come from or why savings didn't show up as expected is nearly impossible.
It's also important to note here that some states' legislation, or separately their program rules, define what may or may not be used in the calculation of cost savings. Some define which measures can be included. Some have yet to include water savings. Some include maintenance and operation savings, and some don't. Over the years, I've seen items proposed as cost savings that actually turned out to be a cost liability for the owner. Knowing the difference between the true savings and what might be future cost liability is what some have called a future capital cost avoidance. This is such a nebulous term, it may ultimately turn out that measures labeled future capital cost avoidance may generate no savings at all.
Wow, that's another great point, John. However, if the replacement of a failing chiller plant means that in future years, the rental chiller costs that were required in the dead of summer will be avoided, and there is appropriate documentation to illustrate these costs, this future cost may be interpreted as a reasonable future cost avoided, at least for 1 year. Let's just agree that it'd be a real stretch to count this avoided cost for every future year of the agreement.
Agreed. So Dale, now that the savings for the energy conservation measures have been calculated, the report requires the illustration of the savings percentage that is proposed to be achieved from each measure in relationship to the baseline energy consumption and demand. The engineer in me sees this as simply taking the calculated or estimated cost savings and determining what percentage of the savings represents relative to the baseline utility that the measure is going to save.
Yeah, to recap the logic here, the report calls for an illustration of existing situation, a proposed replacement or retrofit, a complete illustration of how savings are projected for the measure, and what percent of the pre-construction energy consumption and costs are projected to be avoided.
In a previous podcast, we talked about utility bill analysis. At this point in the report, the ESCO should describe and calculate the savings for any proposed rate changes. Interestingly enough, through the rigorous utility bill analysis an ESCO has completed, they may find opportunities or errors in the billing and may suggest recommendations in the actual billing rates that could result in cost savings. And again, if that's the case, those need to be described fully here as well. But to be clear, those savings are not energy savings, but merely cost savings through a legitimate change in the billing rate for a particular meter.
Yeah, one great example of a rate change comes from facilities that have undergone numerous expansions over time and perhaps now have multiple electric meters tracking the consumption for a single facility. The IGA and analysis might illustrate that no single meter registers enough consumption to be treated at what utility companies call a large commercial user, or rate structure that may appear to be more attractive than a small commercial user. However, the cost for the kilowatt hours under small commercial rates is generally higher because it's likely incorporating anticipated demand charges. Large commercial customers typically enjoy that lower kilowatt hour rate, but separately a demand charge is structured and applied to each billing period. If aggregating the multiple meters reflects the total use of energy at one facility would meet the hurdle of a large commercial user, justifying the application of a more attractive large commercial rate, then a cost benefit to the project owner may ensue. This avoided cost, discovered as part of the good work of the ESCO, should be illustrated and described in the IGA report. Now, we'll leave the determination of whether or not these avoided costs should be included in the project savings to each owner and ESCO to discuss negotiate, and resolve for each project.
This level of detail needs to be shown in all of the ESCO calculations and applied to all measures, including discoveries from the study and interactive savings or penalties as well. One example of an interactive savings occurs with nearly every lighting project. In the reduction of power required for new, more efficient lighting systems or retrofits, are additional savings other than just the lighting cost savings. Typically, when you reduce the wattage of a lighting system, the cooling load decreases commensurately, so there's less of a load on the cooling system, resulting in additional cooling savings. Conversely, however, when you remove that heat from the space, and if the space is also heated, the heating system will have to provide additional heat to accommodate for the reduction in the heat that was generated by the lighting system. This is a very common example of the interaction of savings.
That's a great example, John. Other discoveries or disclosures that should be clearly documented in an IGA include things like restoring fresh air delivery in the retrofit or replacement of an HVAC unit. Poorly working HVAC systems tend to reduce or sometimes even eliminate the appropriate amount of fresh air that was designed to be brought into a facility. This not only needs to be remedied to bring the facility back into code for the health and well-being of the facility occupants, but skews the baseline and pre-construction utility costs and introduces additional costs to heat and cool the facility. Once again, transparency, helping the owner understand these impacts, simply brings credibility and trust to the working relationship between the ESCO and the owner.
Absolutely true, Dale. I want to circle back for a moment to another part of the IGA report, which calls for the documentation, calculation, and savings projections for operation and maintenance savings, or O&M savings. The logic is that the equipment currently operating is older and likely requires significantly more maintenance and operational costs just to keep it running than new equipment will. So in order to be included in the contract, we recommend the owner first of all be totally aware the ESCO is going to consider O&M savings and that the baseline of these current cost records should be provided by the owner, be documented, and then used as the baseline in the contract. Maybe these are invoices for parts and pieces or excessive service calls from outside technicians. It's always best when these O&M costs are documented by actual expenditures. When calculating operations and maintenance cost savings, the ESCO must include the new cost of the preventive maintenance that will occur on the new equipment, rather than assuming there will be zero cost on maintenance. It's important to understand that maintenance is not going to completely disappear. It'll just be reduced, and it's the reduced new cost of the maintenance that needs to be compared to the baseline cost to calculate the net O&M cost savings. Again, the owner needs to have full agreement and disclosure on these particular cost savings.
It's also important to note that enabling legislation in some states doesn't allow O&M savings. And so, of course, you should know by now to defer to the statute in your state. John, you make a great point that there will be operation maintenance costs in new devices and systems, and while they may start out very low, it's quite likely that they'll increase over time, just like the old equipment has. To that end, owners and ESCO should consider the escalation in costs over the life cycle of the device or system. Finally, as John mentioned, these O&M savings must be clearly and definitively documented. Generalizations or unsubstantiated assumptions only serve to demean the credibility of the entire model.
I think that needed to be reemphasized, Dale. Thank you. I've often reviewed investment-grade audits in which most, if not the entire project's energy baseline and energy cost savings use parsed or derived savings projections from computer simulations. For most of the world, the reviewer's eyes immediately gloss over when they see the level of detail that's generated by these computer simulation reports. So let me emphasize again that if the ESCO relied on a computer simulation, an in-house or out-of-house third-party experienced engineer should lay eyes on these calculations to validate their accuracy and consider the reasonableness of assumptions, as those savings are going to define the boundaries for the project. If, on the other hand, the ESCO uses their in-house calculations, like Excel spreadsheets, then, as we've mentioned, all the detail, all the assumptions, even displaying the formulas, should be included in describing how these manual calculations are performed. And, as Dale mentioned earlier, this level of detail may not be necessarily presented in the body of the report, but could instead be referenced as to where it could be found as in an appendix or an exhibit to the draft report.
Yeah, you know, John, another way of looking at this is that no simulation should be relied upon that's not repeatable by another party. That to say, all assumptions, inputs, variables, and values need to be provided so that following reasonable engineering practices, a third party could repeat the work of the model and come up with the same results and conclusions. One final caution here. Sometimes folks present results of proprietary software that's been created or written for their company or organization. If you're an owner, I would proclaim clearly in the project solicitation that the use of proprietary software or systems that did not display all data, calculations, assumptions, and formula would be strictly prohibited. In this fashion, at least all the participants start with this clear understanding. You know, these are big decisions, financial commitments, and should come with full disclosure and transparency along every step of the way.
Well, we've covered a lot in our time together today and hope that you've found it informative and helpful, but there is still more to come.
Join us next time when we wrap up some final components of the investment grade audit. GESPCU. See you next time.